Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packer fans? Happy Friday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. You know Carmen Vitale. You can find her, of course, on Twitter and social media at Carmi V. You can find her on Fox Sports doing just about everything from reporting to writing to podcasting to everything else known to man. Carmen, it is great to have you back here on the Pack-A-Day Podcast. How have you been?
Great. This has been a very busy week for me, as it should be. And I'm actually just about to get on a flight to go back to Chicago to be there for this game. So I'm very excited.
Awesome. Well, that'll make next week's episode even better. So we can get a reaction from you from Packers Bears and see exactly what happened on the ground floor. But obviously super excited to talk to you about this week as well. And I want to start right there because I know this is obviously, we talk about this every week. This is a Pack-A-Day podcast, a Packers podcast, but I can't not start with the Chicago Bears this week because it has been a bit of a bleep show in Chicago over the last few weeks. It definitely feels like that Hail Mary has broken them to some extent. They were 4-2 up at that point, a play away from being 5-2 with games against the Cardinals and Patriots coming up where you felt like could they be 6-3, maybe even 7-2 if things fell the right way. And instead it goes in the exact opposite direction. They lose on the Hail Mary. They get absolutely obliterated by the Cardinals and then basically no show versus the New England Patriots. They fire their offensive coordinator through the course of the week. Shane Waldron is gone. I'll just start there because there's a million other things we can get into. What's gone wrong? Is there anything that this Shane Waldron firing actually helps? And what is the current state of the Chicago Bears?
I certainly don't think it can hurt at this point. And I think from a national perspective, you look at this and you're like, oh, they're a game below 500. Caleb Williams is still on pace for over 3,000 yards. He's going to, and maybe 20 or up to 20 touchdowns. You think, like, is it really going that bad in Chicago? And the answer is yes. This is a complete regression and implosion. This is something you and I talked about, and we talked about ad nauseum after that Hail Mary game, was this is something that can snowball if you're not careful, if you don't pull your team together, if you don't have the team behind you. And clearly the coaching staff does not have the team behind them, especially on the offensive side of the ball. There were players that were openly questioning certain coaching decisions, not only after that Washington game, but then that continued. You even had DJ Moore sitting up or standing up at the podium saying, yeah, Flus said I should keep this in house, then I guess I'll do that going forward. But you know what? I said what I said. And you're like, what? Right. Like, this is just, it's all bad right now. And there, you had to do something to stop the bleeding, to cauterize the wound, to do whatever you could to just get this trajectory back up to where it was before the bye week, because the Bears did start playing really cohesive football. Their defense has been really good, not as much as of late. And you can see that that's kind of where the intangible stuff is kind of coming in, where you just don't know if they believe in the coaching staff as much as they should. But up until that point, up until the bye week, up until that Washington game, the defense had been something to lean on. The offense had started to figure it out. And then after the bye, it was just like you were starting from square one. It was a total regression. So the offense is the offense. The playbook is the playbook. There's not anything you can do about that at this point in the season. But playbooks, I keep saying this, they are hundreds and hundreds of plays big. So you're not using all of those plays. That's not as if like that's your plan going into every week. You pare the playbook down according to opponent, according to what your personnel is that you have available, according to what you feel like they're doing well currently. That is where Thomas Brown comes in. He is the new Bears offensive play caller. He was originally considered for the offensive coordinator job a couple of years ago by the Chicago Bears. He interviewed for that, came up under Sean McVay, was the running backs coach, and then worked with tight ends and was an assistant head coach for the Rams. He came from Carolina last year where he was put in this exact same situation almost. His head coach was fired, who was the offensive play caller, and he took over play calling duties. He had called a game before that, which was against the Packers. Actually, they ultimately lost that game, but Carolina scored, I believe, 30 points in that game. And he also called one drive in the Texans game that got the Panthers their first win. But he now has to be a better play caller. He has to infuse this offense with some life, with some creativity. He has to be the one to pare down what is already available to him, what is already installed, but pare it down in a better way that is better suited for his skill players, better suited for his opponents. And then in game, he will be calling games from the box. He needs to be able to stay 2 to 3 steps ahead like a good offensive coordinator does and really get a rhythm going on this offense, get the confidence of Caleb Williams back up, figure out how to help out the offensive line as they deal with injury, and get the ball to his playmakers. And that's what he said he's going to do. We have to give him a chance. I don't know if it can get worse. So it can get better, I guess.
It could. And I think from a Packers standpoint, there is some concern of like, all right, it was so bad. Like, did you need to make this change going into this week? I'm with you. I think there's very little for the most part that he can do. I'd be curious your answer on this. Do you think this gives Chicago an advantage because of something that he can bring to the table in 1 week and changing the offense? Or does it give them just that boost of it's not Shane Waldron and it maybe gives the players some hope and something to rally around and just something to say, at least it's something different. And maybe that could give them a better chance if nothing else.
Yeah, I think it's the latter given the fact that this seems to be something the players wanted. So players are now incentivized more than ever to make their coach look good. Like, they clearly had lost faith in Shane Waldron, in the offensive scheme, in the process, and all of that kind of stuff. Players also understand that there's only so much Thomas Brown can do. But if this is something they wanted, then they want to have his back. They want to go out there and say, no, this was the right call. We pushed for this, and we were right. So if anything, it's really players trying to prove that what they wanted, that they got, happened. Because if this goes sideways, then, you know, there's even more. There's infighting then, I'm sure. There's like, it divides the locker room. It gets them further away from trusting the coaching staff. It's just, it's all going to be even worse, I think, if this goes bad and you don't get some more offensive production. So I do think that players are going to have some sort of extra incentive to play for Thomas Brown and to make sure that this goes well. And that starts against the Packers. There's more energy. He is different than Shane Waldron demeanor wise. Thomas Brown is, he's a little bit more of kind of that guy. I mean, he was a football player and he at a high level, and he's much more vocal. He's more passionate. He just seems like he connects. That's what we've heard from all of these guys throughout the week, is that he connects with these guys a little bit better. So yeah, they're going to want to go out and they're going to want to prove themselves right. They're going to want to prove him right. And there might be some things that the Bears haven't been showing on tape, even if it's not necessarily plays, just in like sequencing and certain personnel groupings and all of that kind of stuff that Thomas Brown can change, that the Packers aren't going to have seen before. So that is going to be a challenge. But I do think that with the way that Jeff Hafley has been able to adjust, especially in second halves this season, it's just going to be a chess match between these two teams that are so familiar with each other, but they're going to see some things that they probably haven't before.
I am curious of those unscouted looks that we're going to get from Chicago and see, all right, what are they bringing to the table that's different? And what is, you know, sort of the core philosophy of the new offensive coordinator in Thomas Brown? Is it something that, you know, they want to run the ball more? Is it going to be that they're, you know, whatever it might be, it could be a degree of different. And there's always a challenge when you're going against that for the first time. As you mentioned, Green Bay had the opportunity to go against Thomas Brown last year in Carolina. So they have some familiarity there. And Matt LaFleur did say in his press conference that they would go back and watch the tape of that game. But Green Bay has a different defense. Obviously, it's an entirely different offense for Thomas Brown, an entirely different team for Thomas Brown. And he's trying to install something on a very short week. So I'm very curious to see how that looks. Okay. I do want to ask you, is there any truth? I don't even know if this is possible to know, but is there any truth to the rumors that were out there that maybe it was Caleb Williams that the players wanted changed rather than Shane Waldron or the offensive coordinator, or maybe going in a different direction? It was actually the quarterback that may have been the problem and not maybe the offense.
I haven't been able to confirm that reporting. I'm not going to sit here and dispute it because, Sylvie is plugged in and that's where that report originated from. I do think Matt Eberflus did say before they fired Shane Waldron that everything was on the table, but then in that same press conference said, no, Caleb is our starter. Yeah. So I haven't heard from any player personally that said that, yeah, this was right. We wanted to see if maybe Caleb should sit down for a little bit. And that's the thing too, is I think even if there was some sort of talk about that, these guys really do believe in Caleb. They really like Caleb. He has risen to be a leader on this team so quickly as a rookie. I think if there was any conversation among players about if Caleb should sit, it's more along the lines of, should he sit, just take a breather and be able to watch for a little bit and then come back in. It's not that they've lost faith. It's just what's best for him at this point, especially as they're dealing with all of these offensive line injuries and haven't been able to really protect him as well as they would like, on top of the fact that he's not confident in this offense, so he's holding the ball a lot more. I could see why there would be something there, but I was not able to confirm that reporting myself, so I don't want to speak on, you know, if that was true or if it wasn't.
Right.
But I can tell you that the sentiment remains the same in that these guys do believe in Caleb and his abilities.
Yeah, which is understandable. He's a super talented player. They got to figure out a way. And like you said, it's just like this onion that's got all these layers to it of like, you have a quarterback that is still fresh and new and likes to maybe make some plays and not get the ball out of his hands right away. And you've got an offensive line that can't protect that long, a team that doesn't trust their offense, and you just unravel all of it. And it all becomes very messy, very, very fast. And that's exactly what we've seen in Chicago. A couple quick ones. What is your take on the body language police of, hey, the guys aren't picking up Caleb off the ground. There's guys walking off the field, which I know it sounds like he had an injury situation, DJ Moore, that is, you know, guys just seeming checked out at times. Is there something there, or is that much ado about nothing? And then the release of Nate Davis this week. We made it. Green Bay versus Chicago, coming off the bye week, one of the best rivalries in all of sports. And Green Bay looking to start the second half of the season strong. Cannot wait for this one. And just like Green Bay is ready to get back in the action, it's also time for you to get back in the action with Prize Picks. And with Prize Picks, you can win up to 100 times your money with as few as 4 correct picks. And right now, you can sign up and get $50 instantly when you play $5. You do not even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. Simply put, Prize Picks is the best way to win real money this football season. Which players are going off? Which ones aren't? Make your picks in less than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. This week, I'm going with Christian Watson to explode versus Chicago and Chicago to have to settle for a multitude of field goals against this Green Bay defense. The best part is that there are a ton of options out there for you to choose from. So what are you waiting for? Download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after your first $5 play. Prize Picks, run your game. There's absolutely nothing like seeing a football game live, and that's even more so in Green Bay than in any other city or in any other stadium. I had the absolute best time going to the Houston game earlier this year as my son got to see his first regular season game live, and let me just tell you, it was absolutely perfect. And there's no question about it. The best and easiest way to get tickets is on GameTime. GameTime has a new feature called GameTime Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. When I started using GameTime, it was so easy to use, and GameTime filtered out all the extra garbage to show me just the incredible deals that they had on all the great seats. It was simple, efficient, and unbelievably easy to use. It was also super helpful seeing the seat views before buying. And enough with all the false advertising on pricing. Turn on all-in pricing on GameTime to see the total upfront cost with no surprise fees at checkout. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with GameTime. Download the GameTime app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY for $20 off. Download GameTime today. What time is it? GameTime.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's something there. Where there's smoke, there's fire. I do think that it wasn't necessarily due to Caleb. It was, hey, again, like, he's holding the ball, the line is getting beat, things are just not working. I think everybody was just frustrated. And then in those times, you kind of lose the, oh man, sorry, man, like, let's get you up. Like, if that's happening 9 times in a game, It sucks all around. And I think everybody's in a pissy mood. And I don't think that that's a long-term thing with this team, but I do think that the body language, you could see that over the last few weeks that they, again, the coaching staff just did not have a handle on this team whatsoever. You even saw earlier in the year before the team kind of got, to that 3-game win streak, the players went to the coaches and said, we want to be coached harder. We want you to tell us what we need to be doing to get us more involved, to come down on us, to hold us accountable. That was something that wasn't even happening in the beginning of the year, even as the team was kind of ascending. So when you have a player-led team, like the Bears say they do, you need to have a balance of, all right, but who's ultimately in charge? And that needs to be very clear. And I don't think that's clear right now. And maybe that's changing with these moves. And maybe, again, that can provide the spark that gets this team back on track. There is some very small, there's a very small percentage of precedent for this, but we did see something like this happen in Buffalo when Ken Dorsey got fired. And then the team kind of rallied around and I think went 6-1 down the stretch, and the offense looked completely reinvigorated. If this is a player-led team, then the players should be able to pick it up, and it shouldn't matter as much who the offensive coordinator is if they believe in him. So we'll see if that if it ends up being more of a Buffalo situation or pretty much every other situation we've seen, which hasn't really worked.
The upcoming schedule would lend you to believe that this is going to be a very difficult task for Chicago, coming up with six games against the division, San Francisco, and then on the road against Seattle. It's a brutal, brutal schedule. And just last thing as we kind of wrap up Bears here before we, you know, we'll obviously preview Packers-Bears at the end, but Matt Eberflus, is there any real possibility that he can make, I mean, obviously if they go on like a, you, like you said, like a 6-1, 7-1 streak, then yes. But like, is there a realistic world in which he can find a way to maintain his job the remainder of, not just this year, but like going into next year?
Yeah. I'm number one to call for someone's job. And right. I've been someone that has always kind of defended Matt Eberflus, but over the last few weeks when it was clear that the locker room was not behind him anymore, which wasn't the case in prior seasons, even when they only had 3 wins, 7 wins, it did seem like Matt Eberflus lost the locker room, and I just couldn't do the mental gymnastics anymore to justify why Matt Eberflus should stay. Now, the Bears have never made a change in season at head coach. This was the first time they'd ever fired an offensive coordinator in season since that became a position. And I do think that the McCaskies are very cognizant of not wanting to repeat history and what you've done the last two times with Justin Fields, with Mitch Trubisky, where their first year has been for a lame duck coach. And I think that they were, by retaining Matt Eberflus this offseason, I thought that that was more of a signal of, hey, no matter what happens in this first year, we're going to give him more time because we don't want to keep repeating this cycle. And now that things have gone spectacularly wrong and he's fired two offensive coordinators in a calendar year, he had a very mysterious situation with his defensive coordinator last year. He had to fire his running backs coach last year. Clearly, there are some issues with how Matt Eberflus is a head coach and staffs his team. I really don't know. I really don't think that there's, I think there is a chance given the fact that, again, the Bears are very cognizant of not wanting to repeat history almost, and I don't know how stubborn they're going to be about that. But I don't think, barring, again, a 6-1, 7-1 run here, that Matt Eberflus will be the coach of the Chicago Bears after this season.
I can't imagine how that stays. But again, maybe they do go on a run. Hopefully that's not at Green Bay's expense. But we're about to see up close and personal what Chicago has and if they've got anything left and if they've got any fight left in them. It's not super, likely, at least when you watch them in the must-win game at home against New England last week and showed no fight. We'll see. It's a totally different week. You never quite know. We'll get into that in just a moment. Just really quick, as we take a spin around the rest of the NFC North, you had the Lions and Vikings pick up wins, ugly wins, against the AFC South. And then this week, you've got Lions versus Jacksonville, Vikings versus Titans, two more ugly games against the AFC South. Any major takeaways other than the crazy amount of interceptions that were thrown last week from these two games or looking ahead to Vikings and Lions this week?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think that there's any stopping the Lions given, Jared Goff goes and throws 5 interceptions and you win that game. It's an incredible feat, and it's a testament to Dan Campbell and that culture up in Detroit and how much they believe in each other. And there's no blaming going, like, you don't see anything. You didn't see anything on the sideline of anyone blaming Jared Goff for anything or the defense getting frustrated that they had to be in those sudden change situations. That didn't happen. They never let up and they never had any sort of almost no sense of even urgency. Like, it was just kind of business as usual, which I've never seen anything like that, where there was just such a lack of frustration and just an overwhelming sense of belief that they could still pull it off. And they did. So yeah. like doing stuff like that, the teams that I always, I got this from a couple of coaches when I was working for the Buccaneers, and it was something that they harped on quite a bit. And it was the teams that make the Super Bowl, the really elite teams, aren't the ones where everything went right for them, where everything was hunky-dory, sunshine and rainbows, everything. It's the teams that were able to fight through things.
Yep.
And that has been the case ever since I was made aware of just kind of this coaching adage. And that's who the Detroit Lions are. So I can't say enough about them. I still very much believe in the Minnesota Vikings. I know that we've seen a quote unquote regression from Sam Darnold, but again, the Vikings are figuring out ways to win, even if it's ugly. And again, that team is fighting alongside Sam Darnold. That defense is again one of the best in the league still. It was only Jared Goff and Matthew Stafford that were able to figure them out. So that says a lot to me, because those are two of a very, very high IQ, very good quarterbacks that have been in this league and seen a lot. So that makes sense to me. I think the Vikings are still going to be okay down the stretch, especially because they've had people in and out of the lineup. And now that you add TJ Hockenson into this mix, I mean, Kevin O'Connell utilizes his tight ends very, very well. And you saw that even when Johnny Munt was in the game.
Yep.
So now that you have TJ, TJ Hockenson back, that adds a tremendous element to this Vikings offense, and I think they're going to be just fine.
Yeah, I think so too. The crazy thing, the Texans +3 in the turnover battle against both Green Bay and Detroit, lost both of those games, +6 total in those two games, and lost both of those games, which is absolutely crazy. And to your point from earlier, the 10-6 2010 Green Bay Packers won a Super Bowl. The 15-1 2011 Green Bay Packers were out in the first round of the playoffs. Sometimes you have to go through some of those challenges through the course of the year to really build yourself up, learn where your weaknesses are, get better at them, and then be ready to go come playoff time. We see it all the time in the NFL. I even said, like, somebody asked me of like, what's the best record the Packers could have in the second half of the season? And of like, you know, I'm like, even if they could go 8-0 in the second half, I don't even know if I want them to go 8-0, because the odds that they go, what, if they have to win 4 games, 12-0 the remainder of the year, probably not great, right? So like, give me a loss or two in the second half of the season, point out some of the flaws that this team has, and then hopefully they grow and improve from them. But I think people lose sight of that so many times, is that it's the challenges that you go through, the adversity that you go through, that really makes you have to overcome and learn, and then that's how you get better. And we see it all the time in the NFL. I'm a huge, huge proponent of that as well. As we start looking at the Green Bay Packers, I want to ask you just a couple things before we get to Packers Bears and previewing that game. A, what to you, as they're coming off of this bye week, and it looks like they're getting very, very healthy. Jordan Love is a full participant. Colby Wooden remains the only player that's not practicing, obviously outside of Luke Musgrave, who remains on IR. But what is your key for the Packers in the second half if they do want to have a really impressive run in the second half of this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's easy to say what you need defensively, right? It's like, you still need more pressure. Like the Packers have, I think they're ranked 30th in total pressures on the season. It's just, it hasn't been there. And your secondary has been able to account for that with those safeties back there, with especially Xavier McKinney. But that's kind of plateaued a little bit as far as Xavier McKinney's interceptions in particular. So I do think to help that back level out, you can get pressure, force errant throws, affect the quarterback. You know, just make sure that you're getting better push up front that's forcing opposing quarterbacks into some precarious situations, because you know that you have the secondary to capitalize on something like that. So I think that that's probably the easiest way. And I do fully expect Jeff Hafley to have taken this bye week and figured out a little bit more, now that, you know, your Preston Smith's not there anymore. So you're not worried about trying to get him reps when he doesn't sort of fit the system or fit, you know, the role that he's supposed to be in. Now you can kind of get things going a little bit more. And I fully expect that to happen. And then offensively, I don't know that there's much of an actual fix. You just need a little bit more continuity because of Jordan Love being in and out of the lineup and not being comfortable necessarily. And you see some of those mistakes, but like, you don't necessarily want to coach those out of Jordan Love, because that's who he is as a player. And you don't want him to stop taking risks and to play conservative football. You don't need to do that when you have as many receiving weapons as Jordan Love has. Defenses can't account for all of them. There's just no way. So it's just about Jordan Love getting into that rhythm, seeing the field a little bit better, making sure he understands exactly where he can go with the football, and identifying those mismatches or, you know, the single coverage kind of opportunities with the guys that he knows that are going to win those situations. I really think that, you know, Matt LaFleur has been able to adjust sometimes in the middle of a game to different quarterbacks under center and be able to adjust as the game goes on. He's one of the best at doing that. And so I really do think that you just need to kind of get some continuity now where you can just go and rep things over and over and over again and make sure that, all right, yeah, we know our guy. He's healthy going forward. He's in the lineup. Let's get into a rhythm now. And I think that that just comes with a little bit more time together.
Yeah, I think so too. And going back to the defensive side, people are going to be sick of me saying it, but to me, it's a non-starter for that defensive front. If they can't get home with four guys better in the second half of the season, they just can't reach their potential. It's going to be really hard to go on any sort of 3-4 game sprint in the playoffs against some really good teams if you're not getting pressure with guys like Rashawn Gary, Kenny Clark, LVN, et cetera, Devontae Wyatt. So those guys really need to step up in the second half. And then just kind of sticking on that defensive theme, how do you evaluate Jeff Hafley for the first half of this season? I think there's definitely been improvement. I think it's a more aesthetically pleasing brand of football than anything Joe Barry was bringing to the table these last couple of years. But where do you see where he's at so far through the first half?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's clearly in lockstep with management, with Goody, because they, again, did something very uncharacteristic this offseason in getting a high-priced veteran safety in Xavier McKinney. That's not something the Packers usually go out and do. So Jeff Hafley comes in, he says, I need that dude at the safety position, and I need to make sure that entire position, whether it's free or the strong safeties, I need that whole rotation to be fortified. And Goody listened. He went out and got Xavier McKinney, drafted multiple safeties in the draft. And I mean, I'm excited for Evan Williams to come back from injury, because I think that he is going to have a really tremendous second half, I think, the last part of the season in this system. I really like what Jeff Hafley has been able to do in such a short amount of time, especially when you consider, again, we've talked about it a lot, but defensive schemes are fluid. They really are anymore. But when you have the switch from a 3-4, which the Packers have been in for the last, 15 years, into a 4-3, you're going to have some issues as far as, again, personnel stuff. And that's what Preston Smith he's better suited as a 3-4 outside backer. That's not the way that he was being used as a 4-3 D end. It's just his body type, his skill set, it just doesn't marry up. So you need to figure out who can actually make those transitions, because it is still possible, and then who you still need and all of that kind of stuff. So given the fact that he's only had a half a season and this defense is one of the best as far as takeaways go, and they're shutting down opponents, and the Packers, it's become a unit that the Packers can rely on, which I think was the first and foremost, the most important thing you wanted this year. I can't say enough about Jeff Hafley, to be honest. I really appreciate what he's done. It's not perfect, but after half a season, I don't know how it could be. I really like the direction and the trajectory of this Packers defense.
Yeah, we're in lockstep there as well. It's on the right trajectory, and you really like where it's headed, and it's hard to be too upset with anything in the first half, and just needs to continue to grow. Like you said, it's not perfect, but definitely trending in the right way, and that's all you can kind of ask for from a Packer fan standpoint. Let's talk about Packers-Bears. We talked obviously a lot about the Bears at the onset and where they are at in this game. I actually want to start with Xavier McKinney's comments towards DJ Moore. This is interesting for a veteran on the back end of the defense to maybe literally and figuratively poke the bear a little bit in this one. I was a little surprised by Xavier McKinney's comments towards DJ Moore.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny too, because again, Xavier McKinney's new. He hasn't been part of this rivalry. Right. Like he's buying in. And I do think though that comes with, clearly Xavier McKinney is a leader on this defense. Mm-hmm. Clearly he's a leader among that secondary. This is absolutely a tactic. It's saying it publicly is absolutely a way to motivate the rest of the guys around you and to kind of insert yourself into something as a leader. And I do think that that's what Xavier McKinney was doing. He wanted to give his guys the extra motivation, play into the juice, say like, you need to back me up on this. Like I just talked a bunch of mess and now you need to back me up. And I think that that's certainly one way to do it. We'll see if it pays off. But DJ Moore is also very candid when it comes to how he speaks at the podium, what he says at his locker. what he says on social media. So if you're going to poke somebody, like, you're not going to poke Keenan Allen. Like, Keenan Allen doesn't care. Keenan Allen's not going to say anything. Like, you know, you're not going to poke, I don't know, like
Mercedes Lewis,
like, right. You're not going to do any, like, you're not going to poke the rookie and Roman Dunze. Like, you're just not going to do that. Like, DJ Moore was the guy you need to poke and to really get involved in this rivalry. So I love it. I'm a petty queen. I appreciate petty kings. And I absolutely, like, am totally on board with some trash talk. I think the Bears would have done more of it leading up to this week had there not been gestures wildly, all of that happened this week. They don't really have a leg to stand on in trash talking right now, but maybe they'll try to trash talk on the field, or let their play on the field rather do the trash talking.
And that's what DJ Moore said today as we're recording this, is that it's all smack talk or whatever. We'll see what happens on the field. Didn't seem like super aggressive, but we'll see. You know, he's an interesting player. And if there's one player that, you know, like you said, is very emotional and you want to maybe play into that a little bit and start getting those emotions heated up, well, DJ Moore is definitely one that maybe you pick and prod a little bit and start getting him a little bit on tilt going into that game. Speaking of which, what are your keys to this game for both sides, and what are you going to kind of be watching for?
Yeah, I really need to see some sort of rhythm coming out of the Bears offense. And I want to see that means short passes. That means intermediate passes. That's somewhere where Caleb Williams has excelled throughout this season. And then it's like, when you get to the passes of 20 yards or more, that's where everything just goes to hell. So I want to see him be able to get in a rhythm. And that means including guys like DeAndre Swift in the pass game, getting him out into space. Cole Kmet, who has completely disappeared from this offense over the last couple of weeks since the bye. It's kind of incredible to me, given how much of a safety blanket he had proved to be up until that point on some of those check down options. And it's not as if they were even utilizing these guys as part of the protection scheme for the offensive line. Like, there were so many things that I was like, all right, maybe if they're not getting targets, it means they're blocking. No, they're not blocking. So then why aren't they getting targets? It just didn't make any sense. So I need to see those guys get involved more and just kind of that rhythm passing game get involved more. I do expect there to be a little bit more window dressing on this team when it comes to what plays that Thomas Brown is going to call. Something that's very indicative, and it's something that I looked up the other day and I put it on Twitter, but something that's very indicative of a Sean McVay type offense is that you don't really vary your personnel groupings a lot. And true enough, the Bears run 11 personnel at the 11th highest clip of any team in the league. Very indicative of a team like Sean McVay's Rams, who live in almost exclusively at 11 personnel. But what Sean McVay does that the Bears have not done up until this point is that he uses motion. And he uses a lot of it. The Rams have the most motion snaps of any team in the league. In contrast, the Bears have the third fewest. And it doesn't make a lot of sense, because if you're not going to vary your personnel groupings, then you're not going to force defenses to think that they need to substitute or kind of they can't pin their ears back, all that other stuff. If you're not going to use motion and you're just going to trot out the same looks, it like that, there's a disconnect there. And it's very easy to defend that, quite honestly. So I'm very much interested to see if the Bears get a little more creative with some of their play calling. And then, I mean, the thing is, they're still hurting along the offensive line. So when you talk about a Packers defense that needs to get more pressure, that needs to push the pocket, affect the quarterback, and do it with four, like you said, this is an opportunity for them to do that. Yeah. And from all the self-scouting that Jeff Hapley and Matt LaFleur even have done this, over the bye, that is the thing that I think jumps out the most to me as something that's the most immediately, you could remedy it immediately. There we go. Yeah. So I do think I'm looking towards that. I'm going to look at how this Bears offensive line kind of responds. But I do think that the Packers have the edge here as far as their defensive front goes, because you've got so many good players on that line and so much talent along that line. I don't know if this is going to be a big, interception game, or if Xavier McKinney can get back on track, because again, of what I said before, I don't want Caleb Williams throwing deep right now. I really don't. Just take what the defense is giving you, take those checkdowns, just kind of control the ball as much as possible, keep it in your hands on offense, because we know what Jordan Love and this Green Bay offense is capable of. And sometimes I have faith in the Bears defense. They've been a good unit. I think they'll be reinvigorated coming into this game. They know how much pride is on the line, but sometimes it's just better to keep it out of the hands of Jordan Love and the rest of his receivers, because there's just no contending with all of them. So I do think that that's the best defense against the Packers, but I think that there's an opportunity there for them to really, like Jordan Love has gone off. You look at his splits against the Packers or against the Bears last year, and it's just like, I expect that to hold up, and I expect that to be the case again. But it's going to be very interesting to see if we get something different out of the Chicago Bears than the Packers are ready for.
Packers QBs do own the ownership deed to the Chicago Bears franchise, as Aaron Rodgers.
It was transferred to Jordan Love.
We did confirm the deed was in fact transferred. So we do know that to be a fact. Before we get you out of here, if you were from a Packers side of things, what would be, if anything that could give you cause for concern going into this game? Is there what could Chicago do to pull the upset in this one?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that just kind of across the board, the Packers have the edge here. Again, it's just like this league factor. It's like we saw it happen last week with New Orleans. Like, no, I didn't give New Orleans a shot. I do the PFF show with Trevor Sikkema, where we preview every game. And both of us were like, yeah, so New Orleans, if they end up pulling this out, it's going to be one of those crazy NFL this league things. And that's kind of how I feel about this game. I do think that there's just so many opportunities with the injuries that the Bears are dealing with and that the Packers are no longer dealing with. You know, they're healthy. They're coming off the bye. They're coming off of being able to, again, take a look back at the first half of the season and see correct the things that they need to correct. I'm sure they're going to end up putting on tape some unscouted looks already, given the fact that they've had this break. So I don't know. I'm struggling to think of anything that I'm really concerned for the Packers with. It is, I suppose, you know, just limit the turnovers from Jordan Love, because Jalen Johnson is fully capable of doing that. So is Kevin Byard. You know, he's having kind of a little bit of a quiet career resurgence when it comes to the secondary. You're not going to have to deal with Jaquan Brisker still. Unfortunately, he's still dealing with a concussion, and you've seen kind of the takeaways from this Bears defense drop off a little bit now that he has not been in the lineup for quite a few weeks. I think that the Packers really hold all the cards, but the Bears just have the weird, we made a bunch of changes. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Dumber things have happened to the Packers. Dumber things have happened in this league than somehow the Bears pulling off an upset against Green Bay. But I'm with you. I think Green Bay, clear favorite, although that line has gone from 6.5 to Green Bay to now only 5 to Green Bay. So it has been moving in the wrong direction, at least from a Packers standpoint.
Still a pretty big line for a road game.
I would agree. I think we all agree Packers have more opportunities in this one to win than the Chicago Bears do. Carmen, phenomenal stuff as always. Tell us all where we can find your incredible work.
Yeah, go to Carmi V on Instagram and Twitter X. I also just joined Blue Sky, Carmi V. Sky. I think it's bluesky social.com. I don't know. They're weird. Just go search Carmi V on Blue Sky if you're on there. So far, having a good experience. I literally just got on yesterday, but it seems to be a nicer place. So we'll see if I stick with it.
I'm enjoying it so far. I actually really, really like it so far. But I also I have to have another one of these things now. I've already got it's just like a second thing, but I am very much enjoying it so far. So if you're not on Blue Sky yet, definitely make sure to go check it out for all of you out there. All right. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL on both Blue Sky and Twitter. You can find her at Carmi V on both Blue Sky and Twitter. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.